These are the top stories. A probe finds that Washington sought to take Tehran to the negotiating table to gain more concessions by releasing a limited amount of Iran's frozen assets. Saudi Arabia carries out a fresh airstrike on Yemen, killing a woman and injuring her child in the western province of Hodeidah. And Brazil registers over 76,000 new cases of coronavirus and nearly 2,000 additional deaths from the disease. Welcome to the World News. Our top story this hour, Iran has rejected a step proposal for reviving the 2015 nuclear deal since it failed to suit the Islamic Republic's policies. The proposal was offered through lobbying efforts inside the new U.S. administration and followed up by Europe. The investigation found out that Washington sought to take Tehran to the negotiating table to gain more concessions by releasing a limited amount of Iran's frozen assets. The probe stressed that such proposals must be in accordance with the stance declared by the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution. Ayatollah Khamenei has asserted that the U.S. must practically lift all sanctions if it wants Iran to return to full compliance with the agreement. Political commentator Jason Andrade says U.S. President Joe Biden is pushing ahead with the same policies adopted by his predecessor Donald Trump, which he has repeatedly criticized.
Now, the United States is turning around, telling the other signatories, telling the mainstream media that Iran is refusing to cooperate. It's coming up with new conditions that Iran has to meet a new almost tit-for-tat kind of deal in order to have a resuming agreement, when that agreement is supposed to still be in place right now. The current administration of the mainstream media is not admitting what it is that Donald Trump did to sabotage the agreement. They will criticize him by saying that he did, but they're not acknowledging that it's that those things are being continued under the Biden administration. And that's what's very frustrating in this situation, is they're not making that acknowledgement. They're doing so being dishonest in order to pressure Iran to accept a new kind of deal.
Saudi Arabia has carried out a fresh drone strike on Yemen's Hodeidah province, killing a mother and injuring her child. According to the Yemeni media, the attack was conducted by Arabia and its allies, launched a war on Yemen in 2015 with the aim of reinstating a Riyadh-friendly regime. The war has so far killed tens of thousands of people, mostly women and children. The Arab Kingdom has also maintained a crippling blockade on its southern neighbor, hampering the delivery of vital humanitarian aid to the war-torn nation. The Palestinian Authority and the Arab League have both condemned the Czech Republic's decision to open a diplomatic office in the occupied Jerusalem al-Quds. They call it a violation of international law. The Palestinian Foreign Ministry considers Prague's move as a, quote, blatant attack on the Palestinian people and their rights. Arab League says the legal status of Jerusalem will not be affected by the decision of one country or another to open representative offices. The Czech Republic opened a Jerusalem branch of its embassy in Tel Aviv on Thursday, that after Israel sent several thousand COVID vaccine doses to that country. Political commentator Robert Fantina says Israel is violating international law by spreading out vaccines instead of providing them to Palestinian people.
It's just more of Israel trying to seize the narrative, to be seen as heroic and noble, and by providing these vaccines to different countries. Of course, there are strings attached to them. But again, we have to remember that Israel is violating its responsibilities in international law by not providing those vaccines that it's distributing around the country in order to bribe other nations to recognize in some way or another Jerusalem as its capital, and instead of giving them to the Palestinians who are in desperate need of them, they don't have some response to Israel that will please Israel. But Israel is trying to look like the good guy, but looking just a little below the surface, we see that Israel is once again involved in criminal behavior, which is typical for the Israeli regime.
Lebanese security forces and angry protesters have clashed outside the parliament in the capital, Beirut. Protesters, enraged by political inaction and deepening poverty, called for the immediate formation of transitional government to lead the nation. People of Lebanon have been staging intermittent protests since 2019, when a financial crisis and the national currency tumbling down. The country has also been without a government for months since the previous administration resigned following a devastating blast in Beirut port. Brazil has witnessed a dramatic rise in the number of COVID-19 infections and fatalities. Brazilian officials have registered over 76,000 new daily coronavirus cases. They also reported nearly 2,000 new deaths from COVID-19, raising the total death toll to over 277,000. Brazil has the world's highest fatalities from the novel coronavirus after the United States. The U.S. has so far recorded over 534,000 deaths and nearly 29.4 million cases of COVID-19. Black Lives Matter activists rally in the U.S. city of Louisville, Kentucky, to mark 1 year since African-American Breonna Taylor was shot dead by police.
Lives matter! Lives matter! Lives matter!
Protesters demanded justice for Taylor, who was caught in the crossfire during a police raid on her apartment. The law enforcement officers who were looking for her friend had obtained a controversial no-knock warrant to make a drug-related arrest. The FBI says its probe into the incident has made significant progress. Failure to bring homicide charges against the officers sparked several demonstrations in Louisville. Taylor's death is seen as one of the many cases of police violence and racism which triggered Black Lives Matter protests in the U.S. and other countries. The murder of Breonna Taylor is one of many cases of police brutality and racism in the U.S. During our news review program, we discussed that issue with our guests.
And I welcome everyone to a news review program where we get in-depth in one of the day's top stories. Let's go. And now, Black Lives Matter activists have rallied in the U.S. city of Louisville, Kentucky, to mark 1 year since African-American Breonna Taylor was shot dead by police. Protesters are demanding justice for Taylor, who was caught in the crossfire during a police raid on her home. Law enforcement officers who were looking for her friend had obtained a controversial no-knock warrant to make a drug-related arrest. FBI says its probe into the incident has been making a significant progress. Failure to bring homicide charges against officers has sparked several demonstrations throughout Louisville and all of America. Taylor's death is seen as one of the many cases of police violence and racism, which triggered Black Lives Matter protests in the states and other countries even. Joining us now for this news review is Colin Campbell from Washington, D.C., and Mr. Life Malcolm, community organizer and commentator, joining us from Tampa Bay, Florida. Gentlemen, I'd like to welcome you both to the program here. Colin, we're going to start with you, get the latest, and tell us why Breonna Taylor's case is so sensitive, because we've seen a lot of professional athletes and actors and whatnot refer to her just as much as they refer to the George Floyd case. Tell us what you know, please.
Well, it's because of the situation of what happened, where you have someone who was at home who was killed by people who were hired or who are paid by the city or municipality to serve and protect private citizens. She was a private citizen. She was in her home, and she was killed. And there does not seem to be any punitive measure carried out because of her death. And I think that's why you're seeing so much outrage. This isn't, and again, I hope this doesn't sound the wrong way, but this is not to downplay what happened to George Floyd, where he was accused of a crime and police were called on the scene of a crime, and then something terrible happened, right? This was a person who was just sitting in there, just at home. Imagine just watching TV, almost like Jean Bonhomme, where he was at home and then was killed inside of his house. Like, that's how crazy this sounds, but it was a reality for Breonna Taylor. And so, therefore, you're seeing this outrage from people saying it could be any one of us coming home from work, putting the keys on the counter, grabbing a drink from the refrigerator, and all of a sudden, police mistakenly take me for a criminal and they kill me for doing something totally, totally innocent that we do every day. And I think that's what's causing so much of this outrage. And so you're seeing these protests here. You're going to see more across the country, especially as the George Floyd case picks up steam, because people are just outraged at the fact that you have, again, constables of the law, people who are hired by the state or the city or the county to protect and serve. And obviously, in the cases of Breonna Taylor, George Floyd, and so many others, they did the opposite of that.
Thank you, Colin and Life. I'd like to welcome you to the program. And to Colin's point, Life, tell us how that works. How do you not charge these cops where they're not even in a uniform? They just knock. They don't knock. They basically kick down the door and, so you know, open fire, killing this young lady. I believe she was a paramedic or something, or a firefighter. I'm not sure, but I've seen her pictures in uniform. And then nothing. They snuff her life. And nothing, there have been no charges brought up against them, no justice for her family. Why not?
Breonna Taylor was an emergency medical tech. The reason why there's no, as you call it, no justice for Breonna Taylor and her family is because the African working class is not in control right now. Right now, the people in charge are a colonial power whose effort has always been to exploit African people, work us to death, kill us if we did not want to work for them until we die, capture us so that they can use our capture as a reason to re-enslave us per their 13th Amendment to the Constitution. So there is no justice in this so-called American legal system for African people. The only time African people are going to get justice is when we are in control, when we have power over who walks around our neighborhood with guns and legal authority to use lethal force. The only time we will see justice is when we can put the colonizers on trial and try them for the heinous crimes against African people in the African community, which they perpetrate every day. So when we see people in the street right now chanting things like Black Lives Matter, the question must be, to what end are we exerting these types of efforts? What does it do for us to say something like Black Lives Matter? If Black Lives mattered, then Breonna Taylor would be alive right now. The reality is Black power does not matter. I mean, black lives does not matter unless we have Black power. So the call has to be Black power matters, because then there's a demand made for all who hears the call. African people know that we need to claim power, and white people know they need to watch out because we're coming to take it.
And Joe Biden there, he's basically came in on one of his campaign pledges was a spearhead police reform. Are you buying it? How optimistic are you that throughout the next 4 years we're going to see some serious changes to the police culture in America?
There aren't going to be any changes again until African people take control of our own lives. The reason why this can happen in the United States is because these kinds of crimes can go unpunished, as you call it, in the United States, is because the state legalizes itself. It passes laws that legitimizes its own misdeeds. And more than that, the state does not even govern itself by its own laws. That is why they can kill us and get away with it. But if we even run from the police when they're trying to kill us, we catch a charge. It's called resisting arrest without violence. That's why they in the United States, white people can sell all kinds of opioids and what have you and make millions of billions of dollars, but the African on the corner selling street-level drugs will go to prison sometimes for decades. And so it's not just this idea of the United States legal system. It's this idea that colonial domination is a constant system of oppression that African people must resist every chance we get in every form of fashion we can.
Gentlemen, thank you, both of you. I wish you both stay safe till we speak to both of you again. Colin Campbell, they're joining us from Washington, D.C. Mr. Life Malcolm, joining us from Tampa Bay, Florida. And that's a wrap for our news review program. Thank you for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
Welcome back. Venezuela regrets and rejects a recent statement by the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, Michelle Bachelet, who spoke about violations against the people of the South American country. Caracas says the statement is unfounded and threatens to stop cooperation with the diplomat if she shows no rectification on her words. From Caracas, here's Jesus Silva.
Venezuela accuses UN High Commissioner for Human Rights Michelle Bachelet of falsehood in her report about Venezuela during the 46th regular session of the UN Human Rights Council. Caracas denounces that Bachelet mentioned supposed human rights violations allowed by the government of President Nicolas Maduro that are not the result of a proper investigation. The Maduro administration pointed out that the diplomat's report is unbalanced and politically motivated by the United States through the self-proclaimed Lima Group, which overlooks the norms and principles that rule the treatment of human rights issues. In this light, President Maduro has said that if Bachelet does not rectify her mistaken report, then relations with her office may get suspended. Venezuelan officials totally support Maduro's demand.
The UN official must modify her views on Venezuela based on real evidence, rather than political propaganda from the U.S.
Meanwhile, some opposition members say that the UN commissioner has accordingly described Venezuela's flaws on human rights.
The UN official has reported the truth. This country has hundreds of political prisoners, and this cannot be hidden.
However, legal experts disagree with Bachelet's report.
Bachelet took information only from opposition activists and not from the country's institutions. Her report is fully biased.
President Maduro says he demands an objective view on the part of the UN commissioner instead of sticking to the slandering rhetoric of the U.S. Therefore, he expects her rectification or else diplomatic relations will be cut off. Jesus Silva, Caracas.
Well, protesters in the French city of Lyon have taken to the streets to protest against a controversial security bill. The rally was organized by activists and families of victims of police brutality. Demonstrators voiced opposition to the bill and slammed it as a violation of their rights. Motion seeks to restrict circulation of images of police violence, would also extend police surveillance powers through the use of CCTV and drones. The bill is expected to go before the Senate on March the 16th. Critics say the measures restrict civil liberties. Several people are arrested in the Belgian city of Liège after anti-racism protests turned violent. Several police officers were wounded in the Black Lives Matter demonstration. A police spokeswoman said a group of youths joined the peaceful protest and then left the demonstration to wreck the city center. She said they moved very quickly in groups, looted stores, and threw stones at police stations and vehicles. Violence broke out during a protest against the arrest of a woman who has since accused the police of racism. The police have rejected that charge, claiming that the woman had resisted arrest.
A diverse range of programs. Youth. Spirituality. Culture. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Republican governors are increasingly ordering schools to bring young children back into classrooms, their demands bolstered by declining coronavirus cases and calls from federal health experts and President Joe Biden to reopen schools. The article you're about to hear has been written by the New York Times journalist Nicholas Fogel Burrows. The piece is titled, Republican Governors Are Ordering Schools to Reopen, Buoyed by Declining Cases and CDC Advice. Stay with us for more of Nicholas Fogel Burrows' article. Republican governors are increasingly ordering schools to bring young children back into classrooms, their demands bolstered by declining coronavirus cases and calls from federal health experts and President Joe Biden to reopen schools. On Friday, 5th of March, the Massachusetts School Board gave the state's education commissioner the power to force school districts to bring students back, a dramatic step that allows the commissioner to override local school boards. Earlier this week, Governor Doug Ducey of Arizona ordered all elementary schools and many middle and high schools to offer in-classroom instruction by 15th of March. A law signed by Governor Kim Reynolds of Iowa went into effect last month that also requires schools to offer full-time classroom instruction. As President Joe Biden has embarked on an aggressive effort to encourage in-person learning, governors have shown that they're increasingly willing to make unilateral decisions about reopening schools, nearly a year after many schools were first shut down. There is no substitute for in-person learning, especially for younger students, students with disabilities, and English learners. Jeffrey Riley, the Massachusetts Education Commissioner, said in a letter to the State Board this week, adding that about 300,000 students in the state were attending schools that provided only remote instruction. Massachusetts, Arizona, and Iowa joined at least four other states with Republican governors, including Texas and Florida, where state officials have demanded that schools offer in-classroom instruction for at least some grades. In many cases, orders that schools reopen have come over the objections of teaching unions, some of whom have argued that their members must be vaccinated before risking exposure in school buildings. President Joe Biden said this week that all teachers should receive at least one shot of a vaccine by the end of the month. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, has recommended that elementary schools open if they follow precautions, and its guidance says that even where transmission is high, elementary schools can reopen safely by implementing strict safety measures. Among schoolchildren of all ages, though, only about 4% live in counties where transmission is low enough for schools to safely reopen without additional restrictions. An opinion poll last month from Pew Research found that about 59% of adults believe schools should wait to reopen until teachers have had a chance to get vaccinated. The percentage was even higher among non-white adults, and 80% of black adults said schools should wait until teachers can get vaccinated, the highest of any racial group. People who made less money and Democrats were also more likely to say that schools should wait. In Massachusetts, elementary school students will most likely return to classrooms full-time next month, said Mr. Riley, the education commissioner. Riley vowed to continue working closely with medical experts when making decisions about reopening schools. In a limited set of circumstances, he said, schools could get waivers allowing them to reopen more slowly, and parents will be able to choose to keep their children at home and learning remotely throughout the end of this school year. But, Mr. Riley said at the meeting of the State Board, whose members are appointed by Governor Charlie Baker, that next year parents will need a medical exemption to keep their children out of classrooms, the Boston Globe reported. At this point, with the robust mitigation strategies we have in place and all the data and evidence we have in hand, he said, it is time to begin the process of returning even more students to classrooms. Meanwhile, a group of parents urged their children to burn face masks on the steps of the Idaho State Capitol on Saturday, 6th of March, in a state that has never had a statewide face mask mandate. "Destroy them, feed them to the fire, we don't want them in our world anymore," young children are heard shouting as they grab handfuls of surgical and cloth masks and toss them into a barrel of flames. Adults in the background cheer them on. Idaho Governor Brad Little, a Republican, has resisted a face mask mandate in Idaho despite research showing mask mandates are linked to fewer infections and COVID-19 deaths in counties across the United States. Conservative lawmakers in the state have nonetheless pushed legislation banning any such measures. The demonstrations were in part organized by Dar Moon, the husband of Dorothy Moon, an Idaho state representative. Dorothy Moon, along with another state representative, Heather Scott, called the demonstrations a grassroots project that we have become aware of and fully support. Dorothy Moon claims that the state has a low caseload that doesn't justify protective measures. A total of 1,880 people in Idaho have died from the coronavirus, according to a New York Times database.
Food for thought.
Salam, and let us reflect upon what Imam Hussein, peace be upon him, told a person who said, "Favors are worthless if they are done to other than those who seem to deserve." No, this is inaccurate. Favors should be like the heavy rain that covers both the pious and the sinful.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
This is Foresight. a program on how to worship Allah. Today's great tip, the secrets of congregational prayers in our Ubudiya, and why some people might not participate in these congregational prayers. Now, dear listeners, we were talking about the secrets of Friday congregational prayers in our Ubudiya and the very different and multiple aspects of congregational prayers which help and enhance our Ubudiya. We wanted to specifically talk about why some people don't participate in these congregational prayers. You know, talk about some of the excuses that people might have and also some of the responses to these excuses. Now, some people are really just unaware of the rewards for attending congregational prayers, meaning they just don't know the value, they don't know the spiritual and even worldly rewards and benefits for attending congregational prayers. And so on the account of the unpleasant behavior of some worshipers in the masjid, in the mosque, some people might not give due importance to congregational prayers. Of course, here we have to keep in mind that there are immeasurable rewards, both spiritual and worldly, for congregational prayers. So if we are unaware of these rewards, we should really go ahead and check out some of these books of tradition or some of these speeches which tell us the great rewards for congregational prayers, both as spiritually and materialistically. And of course, the issue about the unpleasant behavior of some people who go to the masjid or some people who go to the Islamic center. Now, we have to realize that not everybody is going to be perfect in the masjid or the Islamic center. Matter of fact, nobody in the Islamic center is perfect. But now, that doesn't mean that somebody's unpleasant behavior or somebody's rude manners should be a reason for us not to go and gain the rewards, both spiritual and worldly, that are inherent in the congregational prayers in the masjid. And of course, it is when we will go to the masjid and perhaps help another human being, help a brother, a sister, and help them to overcome this unpleasant behavior, then not only have we acquired the spiritual and worldly rewards of congregational prayers, but we have also helped out a very dear brother and sister in iman, a brother and sister in faith. And thus, how beautiful is it that in this manner we enhance our ubudiya, our servitude of Allah.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome to this segment of the program, Foresight. My name is Muhammad, and today I'd like to read to you the English translation of an excerpt from Munajatul Muti'in Lillah. Please stay with me. Thank you.
O God, place me among the chosen, the good. Join me to the righteous, the pious, the first to reach generous gifts, the swift to come upon good things, the workers of the abiding acts of righteousness, the strivers after elevated degrees. You are powerful over everything and disposed to respond. By your mercy, O most merciful of the merciful.
Welcome back, dear listeners. In continuation to what we were saying, as far as the secrets of congregational prayers in the masjid, and specifically, or more generally, congregational prayers in the masjid or the Islamic center, how these prayers are so very important when it comes to our ubudiyah, our servitude of Allah. Perhaps some people are unaware of the rewards for attending congregational prayers. And we also talked about that perhaps it is the unpleasant behavior of some worshippers in the masjid, in the mosque, in the Islamic center, in the Husayniyah, which perhaps makes us not want to go there. But these are not excuses, and we had explained the responses to these excuses as well. Now, some other reasons that people put forth and make an excuse as to why they wouldn't go to congregational prayers, Salat Jama'at. One of the excuses that is brought forth is that there are some people who take the potentially bad behavior, or perhaps behavior that isn't as good as it should be. It doesn't necessarily have to be bad behavior, but just kind of perhaps unpleasant behavior of the congregational prayer leader, the imam, as the reason for not attending the congregational prayers. And so this potentially unpleasant behavior, or this behavior that isn't perhaps 100% in accordance to the ideal that we have for the prayer leader, for the imam of the congregation, we consider this behavior to be contrary to the quality of justness, of adalat, which is required for an imam. Now, for this point, we do have to remember, dear friends, that the justness of the imam, the adalat of an imam who leads the prayer, is definitely a condition for them to be an imam. But now, this justness and this adalat and them being just also, it has certain criteria, it has certain conditions that need to be fulfilled. Sometimes our ideal of the imam is so high that we kind of expect them to be like an infallible imam. And this is not correct. The imam who leads the prayer, yes, he should be just. And there are different definitions, there are different frameworks for this justness. For example, not committing major sins openly, refraining from committing minor sins persistently, right? These things are out there in the open. But to start to say, well, he didn't laugh at my joke, or perhaps he didn't say thank you after such and such thing, or he didn't say please before he... Sometimes we do these things, and we think that the imam needs to be perfect in all aspects, when in reality, this is not the way that it is. They won't be perfect in all aspects. We need to learn to forgive and forget, and make sure that we know what it means when it is said that the imam, the prayer leader, must be just.
Ya Allah, ya Allah, ya Allah,
ya Allah, ya Mannan, haqqiq
amali. IRIB English Radio.
Our website is parstoday.com.
Ya Allah, ya Rahman, haqqiq amalina, waffiqna fi kulli an fi ma sa'ina.
Now we invite you to listen to Sheikh Salim Yusuf Ali.
We as individuals and in our lives, especially within our families, we need to be people who talk about Allah. And we need to talk about the Ahlul Bayt, especially the Imam of our time. What I mean by this is that we need to create an environment where Allah is present. Right? They say that the daughter of Allama Tabatabai says in one interview that our father, Allama Tabatabai, used to talk about Allah so much and remind us that He was present and watching over us that we used to think it would be impossible to do an action without feeling the presence of Allah. Right? That's the way it should be. That environment should be one where we're talking about Allah. You see, brothers and sisters, the way that our children are taught, the way that we ourselves were taught in the educational system, is a way that God has been stripped away from the equation. Right? When you learn about the way that the universe operates, for example, you learn about the water cycle. All of you have, or you know, at one time will study about the water cycle, and you learn about how, you know, that the earth, how water moves about in the earth, from rains, from clouds, from water supplies in the earth, right? And people drink it, and whatever, it just goes in a cycle. The whole time you learn about that, or you learn about any of the other facts or theories about science, whether it be the way the human body works, or whether it be evolution, right? The whole time you read about it and learn about it, God is stripped away. But if you look at the language of the Quran talks about some of these same scientific phenomena, but it does so with a different language. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in Surah Furqan 25, verse number 48, وَأَنزَلْنَا مِنَ السَّمَاءِ مَاءً. We are the ones who send down water from the sky. Who's taking credit for it? Right? Who is this action being attributed to? Is it that the clouds, rain is falling from the clouds? Or is it that Allah is causing rain to fall from the clouds? So if it's raining outside, right, as a believer, I should mention, thank Allah for sending us this rain. This simple statement will find a place in the hearts of our children and it won't leave.
Welcome back to your listeners. This is Foresight on IRIB English Radio. So we were talking about the importance of congregational prayers, and we were talking about some of the common excuses that are brought forth for not attending the congregational prayers, and we were going one by one through these excuses and giving the proper responses for them. Of course, we have said in many programs the incredible spiritual and worldly value of congregational prayers. And so we're trying to make sure that we can go to congregational prayers as often as we can. Now, sometimes the environment or the conditions really aren't such that we are able to go to congregational prayers, but the most beautiful thing about Islam is that it is flexible and it is practical. And so in perhaps today's age and time where it's truly difficult, or more than difficult, it's almost impossible to go to congregational prayers, perhaps because of the COVID situations. Well, in this situation, we can always do our congregational prayers at home with our family. Now, the last thing that people sometimes bring up is not really an excuse, but it is a quality or a characteristic. And this is that they are lazy or self-indulgent. And when it comes to the acts of worship, the acts of ubudiyah, they're kind of sluggish and languid and insolent, and they just don't care about these acts of worship. Now, always remember, dear friends, that these acts of worship, these forms of ubudiyah, of servitude to Allah, is what gets us close to Allah, the Mighty, the Exalted. It is these very acts of worship that really creates a connection and a relationship between us, the servant, the created, and Allah, the master, the creator. And so we should take them seriously. We should really be eager to conduct and perform these acts of worship. Now, of course, day one is not the same as, for example, day 10. The first day you might not feel so good, but then the second day you feel better, and then the third and fourth and so on, until truly you start to appreciate the value of these acts of worship, and you truly start to enjoy these acts of worship. And sometimes it might take days, sometimes it might take months, it might even take years. But the important thing is to continue to try, continue to do these acts of worship, whether they are the individual prayer or the congregational prayers, and thus we will be able to enhance our ubudiyah, our servitude of Allah. إلهنا ما عاد لك مليك كل لمن ملك لبيك قد لبيت لك. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Foresight. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. Until another episode and another great tip, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Welcome to the lighter side of the news. It's great to have you with us. Now, the first gorilla born in the Berlin Zoo in 16 years finally has a name. The naming day was celebrated with no visitors due to the coronavirus pandemic. However, zookeepers made the day special for the tiny gorilla and her first-time mother with their favorite treats. The baby was born in mid-February. After a few weeks, the zoo received over 17,000 name suggestions for her. The low number of female firefighters across the world may indicate women's lack of interest in the job, but this female-only Brazilian firefighter crew is here to prove the opposite. The all-female team say their main goal is to empower women through the work they do. They say they are willing to prove that women can take any job that can help society. The firefighting crew started their activity just on Monday on International Women's Day. They work in southeastern Brazilian state. Although women have a variety of fire service roles in different countries, they account for less than 20% of firefighters worldwide.
Plastic waste has become a global environmental challenge, causing frustration among residents as recycling is not common everywhere. But a Filipino artist has grabbed the opportunity to turn trash into treasure. Since 2019, Gilbert Angels has been transforming plastic waste, especially non-recyclable trash, into beautiful paintings. He has so far made over 24 artworks by scattering shredded plastic bits across his canvas. The artist also uses expired paint and leftover wood from demolished homes. Angels said he gets some of these materials from around his neighborhood, while the rest is given to him by donators. He says that he got the idea to put waste to good use when he found out that his country is one of the world's top plastic waste producers.
We are the third contributor of plastic waste into the ocean, the third in the world. When I found out about that, I had to think of ways to raise awareness and knowledge on the reasons why we contribute this much waste.
The artist's works have been displayed in famous galleries in the Philippines. They have sold for prices ranging from a few hundred to a few thousand dollars. And Jess has also created an advocacy group called Green Arts, aimed at encouraging artists to use recycled waste for their work. In China's commercial hub, Shanghai, is not only filled up with skyscrapers, but this cosmopolitan city has many incredible things to attract domestic and foreign tourists as well. Unofficial statistics show Shanghai is China's de facto capital of animal cafes, which are growing in terms of numbers and the variety of species that they host. There are now all kinds of animal coffee shops there. One of these venues is filled with cute furry raccoons, which sometimes tug at customers' clothes while they are served their food. In another cafe, clients can enjoy the company of outlandish reptiles as they sip hot drinks. Those who frequent these bistros say the activity helps them relax and forget the hustle and bustle of city life. An advert showcasing a bowling alley has become an instant hit online by combining expert drone flying techniques and impressive filmmaking skills. The 90-second-long one-take video is titled Right Up Our Alley. The journey begins with a drone flying over the Blind Lake Bowl in the U.S. city of Minneapolis before swooping inside the venue at a remarkable speed. The device then flies over bowling lanes and small passageways, taking the audience on a tour of the entire facility. The footage ends by the drone crashing into the bowling pegs. The video has already racked up millions of views online.
Yeah, I think there's some skepticism there of it being a true one take. It is a true one take. There's no CGI. You know, that was kind of interesting, but also the positive nature of it, of people seeing the skill that it takes and the unique ability to, like, combine the skill of an amazing pilot, the technology of the drone, and the story that, thank you, the story that actually can be told through a one take.
The footage was shot by a quadcopter drone. It took the pilot and the director about 10 to 12 attempts over 2 hours to produce the perfect take. The filmmakers undertook the project free of charge. Their aim was to help local businesses recover from the coronavirus-related losses.
A Swedish scuba diver is using his skills to clean up the underwater environment.
My name is Fredrik Johansson, and 2 years ago I started up a project called Rena Malaren. We have two goals. One is to get a lot of toxic waste up from the water, and the other thing is to make people over up this planet and to do better.
A number of Swedish scuba divers have voluntarily joined Johansson's program. They pull out harmful waste and trash from waterways and lakes. Johansson says he is shocked by the number of polluting fragments discovered in the Swedish marine environment. He says one of the main polluting factors is lead batteries discarded from boats. He says many waterways in the capital Stockholm are littered with these used batteries.
A new study has revealed a sad fact. Humans have destroyed around two-thirds of the world's tropical rainforests. According to a report by Rainforest Foundation Norway, logging and land conversion has ruined 34% of tropical rainforests. They have also caused degradation of another 30%, which makes the forest more vulnerable to fire and destruction. The report says that since 2002, over half of the vanishing has occurred in South America's Amazon. Experts believe the loss of tropical forests makes climate change worse. Japan is famous for its vending machines, but the technology is now being used to improve public access to coronavirus test kits. A group of medical experts in a clinic has set up 7 vending machines across the capital, Tokyo, to sell their test kits. Customers take the PCR test and then mail off their saliva sample for processing. Each machine holds 60 kits. The idea was met with great enthusiasm from people. It helps them to avoid crowded clinics.
Without PCR tests, we can't make a diagnosis. Early diagnosis and early treatment is a basic idea for all diseases. But unfortunately, there is no treatment for COVID-19. So I strongly felt that we had to do early diagnosis and early isolation.
Experts believe the number of PCR tests conducted in Japan is extremely low. They hope that the initiative can increase the figure. The machines sell the kits at around $40 each.
Teams of racing dog enthusiasts have converged on the Russian city of Irkutsk to participate in a 150-kilometer marathon on ice. The contest was held on the icy surface of the famous Baikal Lake. The racers, who started off at 5 p.m., had to put up tents and use warm equipment to withstand temperatures as low as minus 12 degrees Celsius to spend the night. Participants are free to choose their tactics throughout the race.
What's good about this race is its straightforward format. Now the racers start off and we will stop the clock when they arrive. Where they sleep and eat and how they cover the distance is a matter of their personal strategy and tactics. This is a contest for the real athletes.
The dogs can help their owners find the right direction in case they are lost on the frosty path. They can seek help from other rivals too. The Baikal race is an annual event that was held for the seventh consecutive time this year.
Get ready for a big dose of cuteness. In India, dozens of little turtles have been released into sea. Forest officials in a southern Indian town let loose 131 endangered turtle hatchlings. They had kept the eggs for over 50 days until the day came to set them free. The environmentalists also plan to release four other cute turtles, which are still too shy to come out of their cozy eggs. Marine turtles have existed for more than 100 million years. The numbers have fallen in the past few years due to human activities. Moving on, NASA's Mars rover Dot Perseverance has successfully completed its first ever test drive on the red planet. The six-wheeled rover traveled more than 6 meters in 33 minutes. NASA officials called the mission a huge milestone. They also released images showing the robot's wheel tracks on the surface of the planet and surrounding landscape. NASA engineers say they are now preparing for the first flight of a helicopter drone carried by the rover. Perseverance was launched last summer and landed on Mars earlier in February. Its main goal is to search for traces of ancient microbial life there. It is going to collect soil and rock samples from the Martian surface and send them back to the Earth in the next decade for analysis.
An Australian conservation group says it will build the world's first ever platypus refuge facility.
We're also going to build a platypus refuge, one of its kinds around the world. This refuge will be able to take up to 65 platypuses in a time of crisis. Right now there is so much to learn about the platypus, and we know so little. These facilities will be critical in building our knowledge so that we don't let this iconic creature slip off the earth.
Platypuses are among Australia's most unique and elusive animals. They're normally found across the country's eastern seaboard. The strange-looking creatures are the only remaining representatives of their family. They spend most of their lifetime underwater and alone. Australian authorities say the planned refuge facility can give them more information about the animal's preferred environment and breeding. Many habits of the platypuses have remained a mystery to researchers.
That's a wrap-up. Thank you so much for being with us, and bye-bye.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.